Welcome back for the second hour here on the Spencer Wilson Show on this beautiful Friday, July 31st. Happy to be with you again. Big thank you to our pal Terry for joining me in the first hour. We got our pal Rick coming in here in the next hour. But let's start with some racing news because we got some action back on the track after a quiet weekend last weekend. I mean, NASCAR had their race on Thursday last week, so there was literally no racing really between NASCAR, IndyCar, Formula One, or IMSA. None of those series were on the track last weekend, but we are back this week with NASCAR, IMSA, and Formula One. NASCAR going to New Hampshire for the Foxwoods Resort Casino 301. That happening on Sunday. And that is the, I believe, I think the seventh to last race of the regular season for NASCAR. And really, I mean, racing was, along with the UFC, auto racing was one of the first things to come back and start putting on a show. NASCAR was, I think, maybe the first major racing league to return to TV. So just to see them continue to put up races and you know, how they've managed their comeback this season has been a lot of fun. So they'll be in New Hampshire this weekend. Then just a few more, a few more stops on the way to the playoffs. They'll have two in Daytona and a doubleheader in Michigan and Dover after the race in New Hampshire. But that's a fun track there in New Hampshire. I'm always intrigued by the tracks that don't have those banked curves. Much like Martinsville, New Hampshire, pretty, you know, flat turns both ways, so I'm always more intrigued to see how drivers and cars handle tracks like that. So usually New Hampshire putting on a fun show there for NASCAR, can't wait for that. And then IMSA on their way to a place IndyCar was just at. IMSA, the WeatherTech Sports Car Endurance Series, going to Road America for the Road Race Showcase at Road America. Now that is a title that has a lot of ring to it right there. But they're going to Road America. This will be part of the Sprint Series. So a 2-hour and 40-minute race. All four classes will be there. And those are the races to watch. When you have all four classes out there at the same time, with, you know, top speeds being so different and acceleration being so different, that's really where the true show happens in this sports car endurance racing, especially as we get deeper and deeper into it. You have the Daytona prototypes trying to lap some of the slower touring cars. It makes for a very interesting sight, especially on a Road America course that's not super wide. So this is going to be an interesting show. I just recently started getting into sports car racing. I caught a few races last season, but really it was the Rolex 24 this year that got me hooked on it. And just excited to see them at a place really other than Florida, because they are at Daytona for the Rolex 24 and then for their first race back on July 4th weekend. They were there. They were at Sebring International Raceway in Florida. So just going to be a little nicer to have a little bit of a change of heart there, or a change of scenery, with Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin, providing the backdrop at Road America. But that should be a fun race. So if you're interested in that, I recommend you can tune into it. I believe that race is going down tomorrow, so it should be a very fun showing for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Series there. But Formula One, back out there after having their first weekend off after the Hungarian Grand Prix. So looking forward to them being back in Britain, where this is going to be the first of a doubleheader, another doubleheader on the schedule. This one's the actual British Grand Prix, and I believe next weekend is the 70th anniversary Grand Prix of the first Formula One race that I believe happened in Great Britain all the way back in 1950. So should be a fun doubleheader. A lot of interesting things coming out of practice today. The first kind of news, really the first note from practice one, Sebastian Vettel not getting any time out there on track. And for Ferrari, again, this has just been a season that gets more and more frustrating. Because they've already had a car that's proven is not great on speed, and even the handling was not getting great feedback today from drivers after both practice sessions. So for Vettel not to get pretty much any time on track at all there in that first session is not a great start to another weekend for Ferrari, especially coming off the first weekend off. Maybe a little bit of hope that there was going to be a little more juice to that team. And there just doesn't seem to be. And, I mean, what a bummer of a last season for Sebastian Vettel. Whether you're a fan of his or not, this is a man that's a four-time champion, really was kind of the next hope for Ferrari, and that they just have not been able to put a whole season together. And then for them to be as far behind the eight ball as they are this year, just it's disappointing for them to go through a practice session where literally you do not get any time for one of your cars. And Charles Leclerc didn't actually have a bad first practice session. He finished in fifth. He was only 7/10 back of Verstappen for the best time in the first practice session. So there was a little bit of promise being shown from Ferrari in that session, especially with the fact that Leclerc followed it up, finishing fourth in the second session. So it seemed as though he was getting some kind of production out of his Ferrari today, whereas Sebastian Vettel just really couldn't. I mean, they got him back out there for 23 laps in the second practice session, but he was 18th fastest overall out of 20 cars. So it just, I mean, talk about just a bummer of a final season for somebody that has accomplished a fair amount in his career, as Sebastian Vettel has. But that second practice session is becoming more and more interesting, because the first practice session, you know, what, the top five drivers within a second of each other, but there's a little bit of a gap between five and six, and even the top two. Verstappen had a 4/10 of a second lead on Hamilton after that first practice session. But that second session, you had the top 13 drivers within a second of each other. Antonio Giovinazzi, who finished 13th in the second practice session, was 9/10 off of the lead. So if you have 13, and again, you have cars that are trying, you know, qualifying setup, race setup, they're on different tires, whatever it might be. Everyone's trying their own thing in practice, so you can't take these numbers, you know, super seriously in terms of where everyone is with each other. But still, to see a practice session end with 13 cars really within that second gap of each other from first all the way to 13th, if that's the kind of margin we can see this weekend, I am even more excited for the British Grand Prix. And this is usually, you know, Silverstone is usually a circuit that provides some really fun and entertaining races. But my gosh, if we have 13 cars within a second of each other by the time we get to Sunday and by the time those lights go out, buckle up, because that is going to be an amazing British Grand Prix. So looking forward to that. And you know what else is going to be a fun thing to see this weekend? Unfortunately, we did have the first driver test positive for COVID-19. That driver was Sergio Perez of the Racing Point team. And, of course, Racing Point having a really, really strong season this year. I mean, if you look at the first practice session, Lance Stroll was third there in the top 10. Then you also had Nico Hülkenberg, who is back taking the seat of Sergio Perez, at least this weekend, possibly next weekend as well. But Nico Hülkenberg came in at 9th there in P1. And then Stroll was actually fastest in P2, while Hülkenberg worked his way up to 7th. So Racing Point, again, really showing that they have their act put together this year. And you can scoff and make fun of them all you want for essentially making a carbon copy of the Mercedes car in the past. But you know what? It worked. And if a team like Red Bull or somebody wants to do their own thing, more power to you. Try to create your own great car. But if you're Racing Point, you're a team in the middle of the pack that is looking to stand out. And mimicking that Mercedes layout, having the Mercedes engines there, they've stood out this year. And we're still waiting on the result of Renault's protest about Racing Point in terms of getting parts from a team that's also competing in Formula One, which you cannot do besides the engine, of course. But this is a standout performance from Racing Point, and to have that second session where everyone was so close and to have your driver heading up that second session, Racing Point should feel really good. And again, we can't take too much from practice session times, but this isn't like this is the first weekend that Racing Point has shown speed. They've been in Q3, they've been a constant competitor in Q3, and honestly, they're not doing that bad in the standings either. You know, they've had some tough luck here, you know, during some of the races with some retirements. But for the most part, you know, Racing Point is fourth right now. Only a point behind McLaren in third and only 15 points behind Red Bull. If Red Bull have a tough weekend and Racing Point go out there and show them up this weekend as well as McLaren, Racing Point could jump up to third, maybe second in the F1 standings. So a lot of promise coming from them. It's going to be fun to see Nico Hülkenberg back out there. I think a driver that has a lot of world championship quality still and still has a lot of supporters thinking he should have a job in Formula One, There's just only 20 seats, so it's tough to get a job there. But I think Hulkenberg's the right man for oh my gosh, I almost called him Force India, which is a super old reference. Well, I guess not horribly old, but they've been called Racing Point for long enough now. But Hulkenberg has spent time with that team when it was called Force India, now being with it at Racing Point. And really, if you have to think about somebody that's a last-second replacement, not a whole lot of better options than Nico Hulkenberg in terms of quality of driver. Again, very good driver. And two, has experience in Formula One, knows the Silverstone circuit, and is somebody that I think a team can really warm up to for a weekend if they need him, which is what Racing Point's going to do, going to have to do. So just exciting to see Hulkenberg get back and exciting to see if you know, Racing Point can really keep this up. Because when we get to qualifying, where can they be? I mean, they were placed very well in Hungary at the start of the race, so this is going to be another interesting weekend in terms of that mid-pack battle, because it's going to be Mercedes again. I really don't even care that Mercedes drivers were, you know, talking about looking towards the, you know, tomorrow after a hard day of driving at Silverstone. Anything I hear from Mercedes about, oh, it's tough for the team, it's tough. You guys are going to win every race this year. So I'm not buying any of that, you know, we're looking forward to tomorrow because today was really tough. Yeah, whatever, man. You're still in the best car out there. So obviously Mercedes is going to win the race, whether it's Hamilton or Bottas, unless it's a double DNF. One of those guys is going to win the race. But the question that I'm going to be looking for is can Racing Point continue to compete at the front of the pack? Can they get around the McLarens? Can they get around the Red Bulls? Can they really compete with those cars up front and keep it that way this season? I think they've done a great job in the first three races. Can't wait to see what they can do here in the doubleheader at Britain and starting this weekend. I think it's a team that shows a lot of promise. And again, having somebody like Hulkenberg there this weekend, I don't think they're really going to miss a beat in terms of feedback and just ways they can improve on that car moving forward. So Force India, besides Mercedes, I think is the team in the best position right now. Maybe next to McLaren. You know, McLaren could be a close third. But for the most part, Racing Point's the fun team to watch this year. And Lance Stroll as well. I mean, I've had my doubts about his quality in the past. But he's shown a lot of moxie this year. And you know, being fastest in a practice session. Again, we don't know what other cars are doing. But that still says something about the way he can drive and the quality of that car. So I'm going to hope that Racing Point can be up at the front of the pack just to, you know, shake things up a little bit. And maybe we don't see a Mercedes win, although I'd be shocked if we didn't. But going to be a fun weekend to see how it all unfolds and see kind of where they can go from here to next weekend. Because something else that's going to be different about this weekend in Britain is the heat. That's a lot of what you heard about today when watching the practice broadcast or seeing some of the highlights on there. A lot of people were talking about how it was the hottest day that, you know, a Silverstone or the hottest time of year the Silverstone race has ever been competed in. So this is going to be an interesting twist to see if the heat can really throw in any kind of a real curveball by the time we get to Sunday, or if it was just one of those things today as the teams kind of adjust to it moving forward. But nonetheless, should be an exciting show as we get set to go with qualifying tomorrow, and hopefully we can have another exciting race on Sunday in this Formula One season. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, National Hockey League returns tomorrow with a slate of qualifying, the best of five qualifying games. So we will take a look at that, and I'll give you some predictions as well coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, if you weren't happy enough for the NBA to be back, for Major League Baseball to be back, for Major League Soccer to be back, the National Hockey League returns tomorrow. And really, in terms of the four sports that got interrupted, you know, Major League Soccer after their first few games, MLB in spring training, obviously NBA and NHL towards the end of their season, this is the final league to make that return. So it feels, obviously we're not at the end of this whole virus-stricken world and sports world, but it just feels as though we've kind of completed the comeback. You know, we had sports stop. We went through the lull of having no live sports, all the talk about how they were going to come back. Now, all of a sudden, tomorrow, all those four leagues that had their seasons interrupted will be going again. So it just kind of feels like it's almost coming full circle in that aspect of it. But the NHL does return tomorrow. Five games, all taking place in the best of five qualification series. Those games, Rangers and Hurricanes, Blackhawks and Oilers, Panthers and Islanders, Canadiens and Penguins, Jets and Flames will be the first five games to kick off the essentially, it's not so much the restart of the season as it is just the start of the playoffs. You know, the NBA actually had a restart to their season. Major League Baseball, well, actually, neither did Major League Baseball. NBA and MLS really had the restart to their season. Major League Baseball, or I'm sorry, you know what? Doesn't matter. I'm going to move on. But the NHL getting back, getting going again, and with their playoffs and having the expanded version of the playoffs, which I think was the better way to go for them. And really, I think it's going to create some exciting play with the best of five play-in rounds. You know, it's essentially you go down 2-0. It's not like you have two games at your place to kind of battle back into it. Now it's lose one more and you're done. So I think it's going to create a lot more of a intense kind of playoff atmosphere there to start before you jump into the best of seven series from the round of 16 onward. But this is going to be interesting not only to see that, but then to see the round robin seeding games as well between the top four teams in each conference. So let's get into some predictions here. Starting in the Eastern Conference, we'll start with that top four in terms of round robin seeding games. We have Boston entering as the number one seed, Tampa Bay, Washington at three, Philadelphia at four. And really, I mean, those four teams just put on exciting games. So, I mean, the fact that those four are going to have a round-robin play-in competition between the four of them, I mean, that should just get you giddy already as a hockey fan with the way these teams play and how star-power-filled they are. And I personally, I'm going to have Boston holding on. Really, I have all four teams essentially finishing where they enter. Boston enters as the number one seed. I think they're going to, you know, enter the field of 16 as the number one seed there in the Eastern Conference. I just think you look at all the different ways they have an advantage over these teams. I mean, their first line, although, you know, the Lightning may have one of the more dangerous top lines in the league with Stamkos, Braden Point, and Nikita Kucherov. But, you know, Stamkos' status for the round robin is still kind of up in the air for that lower body injury. And I think kind of next to the Tampa Bay Lightning in that first round, I mean, Boston just has an incredible first line. So, I mean, Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, Pasternak, I mean, it's just an incredible trio for Boston to have there. So I think with the advantage there, they also have the advantage there in defense. I mean, the Bruins D, a nice blend of you know, young and old guys, but also guys that can stay home, protect the net, or just bury somebody into the boards. I mean, that Boston physicality is something that I really feel like has just, you know, teams embraced from the get-go of not just this season, but from just the start of their franchise. I mean, anytime coming up and becoming a hockey fan, I heard Boston, I just heard the word physicality, and that stuck with me. So I think that defense is a huge, you know, plus for them. And also special teams. I think Boston has a little bit of an advantage there as well. So I think all of that just, you know, ends up with them finishing as that top seed still in the Eastern Conference and taking off that way. And then Tampa Bay, I think they can finish where they started as well. I think they can finish at the second seed there going into the field of 16. Again, their forward depth is a big advantage, I think, for them. You know, adding Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow there as well just made that team even better there in terms of forward depth. So I think Tampa Bay can rely on that. But again, thinking about anybody kind of going up against that Bruins defense and physicality, I just don't think it's going to be enough for Tampa Bay, although it's a very dangerous forward depth there for them. But I think that'll obviously be a big advantage for them to be able to keep that momentum and stay second in the Eastern Conference. Now, I have Washington finishing third. I mean, neutral ice, the Capitals have had a great you know, advantage in terms of just beating teams to pucks and controlling that center there between between the two blue lines. And also, they've had a really good road record. And this is essentially, unless you're a Canadian team, or really unless you're Toronto, Edmonton, you're playing road or neutral games. So I think that's going to feed into the Capitals as well. And Ovechkin has scored more goals on the road than in at home in his career. But I still don't think it's going to be enough for Washington. I think they finish third and enter as the third seed there. And then Philadelphia, a good team, a strong team, a solid team, but just not enough to get past Tampa Bay, Boston, or Washington. So I think Philadelphia holds that fourth seed as they go into the playoffs there. But I think, obviously, all the games between those four teams are going to be really, really exciting to watch there in the top four. Then the four best of five play-in games for the Eastern Conference. We have the fifth seed Pittsburgh Penguins against the 12th seed Montreal Canadiens. And again, I think it's a relatively even series in terms of, you know, if you think about it kind of more, if you look at it on paper. But I think Pittsburgh with some key advantages. Obviously, their advantage in the first line and their advantage at forward depth is going to be huge for them as they make their way through. I mean, Sidney Crosby had a huge grin on his face if you'd seen any of the videos of them scrimmaging or practicing. I mean, I think just that whole team is going to feed off each other and just enjoy being back in that. I mean, every team's going to enjoy being back in that hockey atmosphere. But there is something about Pittsburgh and just that first line, their forward depth, again, their defense as well. Not to take anything away from Montreal's defense, but it just feels like Pittsburgh, a little more well-rounded, but nothing against Montreal. But I'm going to take Pittsburgh in three. I think they're going to be three tough games, but I think Pittsburgh does win all three in a straight series and moves on to the official first round there of the playoffs. We have number six, Carolina, going up against the number 11, New York Rangers. And this one, I think initially I was going Carolina at first because, again, that forward depth for Carolina just kind of stands out. The run they made last year, the playoffs, still seems very impressive. And they seem to have, you know, built on that somewhat this season as well. So that stands out. But, you know, I just think with the goaltending advantage that New York has and, again, that advantage of, you know, just being able to be good, whether you're at home or on the road, I think the Rangers have done a good job of being able to survive wherever they play. And while this is, I think, going to be a very, very, very tight series, I realized as I was going through my predictions that I didn't have a whole lot of upsets, so I had to pick at least one. So I'm going to go with this one. I'm going to say the Rangers upset Carolina in five games. And I think, again, all five close, down to the wire, but I think the Rangers are going to manage to squeak it out there and advance into that. I keep wanting to say, I guess it is the first round. For some reason, I keep thinking of this as the first round, although technically it's the qualifying and play-in round and stuff like that. And I have a hard time not thinking about this as the first round of the hockey playoffs. But nonetheless, the New York Islanders after that, the 7th seed Islanders taking on the 10th seed Florida Panthers. And again, I think this is going to be a kind of a five-game series, but I think New York has a bit of an edge there in defense and in goaltending. So I just look at that and I think, you know, goaltending going to be – if you can rely on the guy in net more than the other team, you're going to be put up in the better position in this restart in the playoffs. So I think, again, with New York having a slight advantage there in goaltending, I say, again, this is a five-game series, but I'm going with the New York Islanders in five. And the final Eastern Conference series there, the final Eastern Conference play-in series, the 8th seed Toronto Maple Leafs, essentially the host of the Eastern Conference there with the Hub City in the Eastern in the East being held in Toronto, playing the number 9 Columbus Blue Jackets. And again, even though this is in Toronto, Columbus is a chippy type of team, and I think they can really kind of survive on their defense, which is a stout defensive crew there for Columbus. And again, goaltending. I think they have a really good goaltender there. And I really just can't wait to see what kind of develops in this series between Toronto and Columbus. Because I think Toronto, if there was a home crowd there, I would say Toronto is going to have this series maybe in three or four games. But even though it's in Toronto, there is no crowd. So you still have to fight that off and still have to be able to hold your own in these playoffs. And I think Frederik Andersen can do that. And we'll see. We'll see how Columbus does. But I think I'm going to take Toronto in five. I think the Maple Leafs still hold on to this. They still can feed off the energy of a city around them and supporting them. So I'm going to take the Toronto Maple Leafs there in five games in that Eastern Conference series. But then we get into the West. And again, the Western Conference having the Blues, the Avalanche, the Stars, and the Golden Knights as their top four teams in that round-robin competition. And for the most part, I think the top two essentially stay the same. I think the St. Louis Blues will keep that number one seed. I think they and Colorado are going to have a really intriguing fight for that top spot. But, you know, St. Louis, again, that depth at forward and just, you know, being led really by Tarasenko and that team that just hasn't really missed a step. They seem to have come in into this season off that Stanley Cup run and really just fed off it and not missed a step. And again, Vladimir Tarasenko kind of leading the way there for the Blues. I think they're just going to be able to really handle themselves. And they have good forward depth as well. Their defense really stands out. And I think this is just a good time for the Blues to kind of, you know, flex their muscle and put themselves in a good spot and hold on to that top seed there in the West. And Colorado, I think, holds on to that second seed. Colorado with a first line that, you know, hopefully is ready to roll and ready to go, because I think it's one of the better top lines there in the Western Conference and in the NHL. And you know, MacKinnon, Landeskog, Rantanen, all really great players there for Colorado. So they can get those guys healthy into a rhythm. That's a very dangerous crew there. And also, you know, Colorado just seems as though they've had that really good feel of the game. They know how to make adjustments. They know how to feel out an opponent throughout the three periods there. And that's, I think, you know, adjustments, goaltending and adjustments, two things that are going to play big roles in this NHL restart. So I'm going to go with the St. Louis Blues finishing first, the Colorado Avalanche finishing second. And the only swap I have is Dallas, actually, who starts at fourth. I think they'll finish third after this round-robin competition, and the Golden Knights will fall back down to fourth, mainly because Golden Knights still a team that's going through some healing process and just with the kind of the inconsistent play here and there of Marc-Andre Fleury throughout the season. So I just think they're going to, you know, play well, and they'll show some good play still on the ice throughout this round robin tournament. But I just think the healing process and not knowing exactly what you're going to get out of goaltending when this restart happens, I think the Stars are going to be able to get a little bit of an edge there and take the third seed from the Golden Knights. But now we get into the best of five play-in series there in the Western Conference. The number five Edmonton Oilers going up against the Chicago Blackhawks. And I mean, this is a series I think any hockey fan would love, just from the two teams being involved. But again, Edmonton, the host of the Western Conference bubble. So I think, again, there's going to be some energy around that team as they come in. And I have all the respect in the world for Chicago, but for the most part, you know, how do you stop McDavid and Draisaitl? I just don't think you can, especially as the 12th seed there in the Western Conference. So I think it's a tight series, but I'm picking Edmonton in three games over the Blackhawks. Then Predators and Coyotes in that 6-11 matchup. Again, this could be a very interesting one. A lot of people, I've seen a lot of support for Arizona pulling off this upset. I don't feel like that's going to happen. I feel like Nashville, again, just being able to feel out an opponent, having that defensive advantage as well with some bright defense. I'm going to go with Nashville over Arizona in five. Then we have number seven Vancouver going up against number 10 Minnesota. And again, if you're a Canadian hockey fan, six of the seven Canadian teams participating in this NHL restart. The only odd man out is Ottawa, which, you know, they've been struggling now for a few years. But nonetheless, great time to be a Canadian hockey fan. But Vancouver taking on Minnesota there in the 7-10 matchup. And I'm going to pick the Canucks in five. Again, I think this is going to be a very tough and grinded out series for both teams. But I like the chaotic kind of style of Vancouver. And I feel like that could be the case for some of these teams coming out of the restart. So if that is the case, Vancouver can feed into a little bit of chaos and take the series. I'm going to go Vancouver in five. And finally, we have number eight Calgary going up against number nine Winnipeg. And I believe the only all Toronto matchup that we will have period in this qualifying/play-in round. But Calgary going up against Winnipeg. And I'm going to take Calgary in four. Again, I think you have a lot of great depth there for Winnipeg in terms of goaltending, but I still think Calgary takes it there in four games. So those are some NHL predictions as that season again gets restarted tomorrow. We're going to take a break. Our pal Rick will be here in studio. We'll see what's on his mind coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Welcome back inside the studio. He is here once again.
I am.
Saxman Rick Metz in studio.
The Saxman cometh, baby.
How are you, man?
I'm doing great. How are you, brother?
I'm doing great. Happy Friday.
Definitely Friday. Happy sports day.
Yes.
Happy NBA started again day. Happy NHL is about ready to start.
Happy NHL Eve.
And not so happy Major League Baseball might not continue.
I was going to say, we got
the push alert.
We got some breaking news during the commercial.
Yeah, Rob Manfred is telling the Major League Baseball Players Association that baseball could shut down if the coronavirus isn't managed better by the sport.
And no surprise there, really. I mean, we have a Marlins team that's up to about 20 people infected.
Right.
Phillies and Cardinals now have both reported two tests.
Right. And so, the Cardinals played.
Yeah, they played Pittsburgh and Minnesota.
So Pittsburgh and Minnesota have to get tested all over again before they can start up again.
And then if you have six teams testing positive, five, six teams, that's going to be a number of games that go by the wayside.
And they're going to have to figure out some way to make them up. They just knocked down, you know, they're doing all these makeup games, doing doubleheaders, and now they're doing seven-inning doubleheaders.
Yep.
This is crazy.
It's pretty ludicrous out there right now in terms of baseball.
I have a suggestion, although I know none of us are going to be happy about it. Just shut it all down. Just stop. Just give up. I mean, I hate to say it, but I think that's about the smartest thing that they could possibly consider because it's just not working without the bubble.
Yeah, it's not. And I think, you know, Terry and I talked about that a little bit too earlier, but when you had these bubble atmospheres come up, there was some, like, scoffing at it, like, oh, that won't work. You won't get people to abide by the rules. Yet all three bubbles that are going on for Major League Soccer, NBA, and NHL – have all worked tremendously.
And especially the NHL we were talking about the other day. How many positive tests? Zero.
Zero.
Zero. Absolutely no positive tests in the NHL, which is just all due to the bubble concept.
And you know why I think Major League Baseball did not go with the bubble concept? Because they were too scrambled to get their season going, period.
They should have gotten on this a couple of months previously, but they were dragging their feet and arguing like a bunch of whiny babies going, oh, I want this, I want that, I want this. Come on.
I think when the first two offers from each side got rejected, that's when Manfred should have stepped in and been like, okay, guess what? You can't agree? It's 60-game season. And then figure out your bubble atmosphere.
Right, exactly.
But they waited until the 12th hour to announce the season starting.
Right.
And they really had no other option but to...
I mean, look at the problems they ran into. Especially, I mean, the first problem that was obvious were the poor Toronto Blue Jays. You know, no home games because they're playing every one of their games in, you know, a different stadium. They can't play in Toronto.
Got kicked out of Canada.
They didn't have enough time to get that all figured out. So, you know, it is what it is. I just hope they can get it figured out, but I sincerely doubt that they can.
I was going to say, I mean, when it was just the Marlins, I thought, okay, that's fine. They'll you know, put them in their own little bubble.
It's gotten bigger. It's gotten bigger.
But it's gotten out.
Yep.
It's gotten loose.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Let's talk a few other sports here.
I love it. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, let's see. We've got a new Knicks head coach coming in pretty quick.
We do.
Tom Thibodeau for my New York Knicks. And the Knicks obviously aren't in the bubble because they've been pretty bad for pretty much a long time. But that's just the way things go, you know.
But that's an exciting coach to be coming
in. Tom has turned around a lot of teams. You know, every team that he's been with have made a major turnaround, and it'll be great to get a winning culture back in New York City for the Knicks again and see them become relevant once more.
Well, I think what makes Tom Thibodeau so successful and what's made him so successful is he's such a defensive-minded coach.
Yep.
that if he can straighten up a team's defense, that offense just seems to follow along.
It naturally flows right along behind.
So I think that's going to be a great coach to get New York back on the mat.
Never hurts to have good defense.
If there is a coach, a coach that can do it. I think he's one of the ones
that
can.
I'm kind of excited about that, especially being a longtime Knicks fan. You know, it made me feel good. Since we were talking about baseball, interesting stat. This is the first time that no team has started 3-0 since 1954.
Oh, yeah, we don't have a 3-0 team.
There wasn't a 3-0 team at the point earlier in the week where that all played three games. This is the first time since 1954 that no team has started 3-0. Isn't that an amazing stat?
That is.
You know, I love to come up with my tidbits.
I love it.
Let's talk about, the beginning of the season this last week. Ohtani got roughed up.
Yeah, he did.
Coming off of injury, Ohtani for the Angels played the A's last Sunday, and he got roughed up. Zero innings pitched, three hits, five earned runs, three walks, 30 pitches is all he got to throw. And the A's actually still won the game 6-4 because the Angels did come back with some good hitting.
They did.
And the bullpen kind of came through for him.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about Verlander? Does anybody know what's going on with Verlander?
I was going to say, I saw the reports that said he was out for the season, and like hours later he comes out and says, yeah, that's not true.
No, I just have a forearm strain.
Yeah, I'm not done for the season.
I'm definitely not done for the season, that's for sure. That was pretty crazy.
I think Verlander will be back.
Yeah, I mean, unless
of course the season gets canceled, then no one's coming back.
It's crazy right now. It's crazy. And of course, what are the prospects without a bubble for the NFL?
I mean, it's not looking good.
I have seen so many people put on the COVID reserve list, because they're infected right now. They've got the disease. And I've also seen a major amount of players opt out, especially for the New England Patriots.
Oh, my gosh.
Major stars, Hightower, Chung. I mean, they've all said, we're not going to do it. It's not conducive to our health. Sorry. You've got the running back from the Chiefs, just opted out. That was with him this last year.
Of course, I'm drawing a blank.
I'm blanking on his name, too. Damian, that guy. But they just signed Shady McCoy.
They did?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Shady McCoy moved to another team.
He went to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, Shady McCoy went to Tampa Bay. He's going, well, let's see, I got a ring last year. Maybe I can get a ring with Brady this year. But, with all the stuff that's going on, I'm just not sure what the season's going to look like. Don't think there's going to be any fans in the stadium, and if they do bring them in, it's going to be minimal.
Damian Williams,
thank you. There we go. Yeah, he just opted out.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much going on.
There are. Just today, so July 31st, there was 1, 2, 3, 4 more players have opted out just today alone.
Including the major name
for
the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Everybody's opting out. I can't believe how hard hit the Patriots are.
Oh, my gosh.
I just think that, they're really going to have to reassess their plan.
I mean, Belichick is going to get tested this year like never before in terms of his coaching style.
Exactly.
Here.
And Belichick's one of the best coaches ever. I'll be the first one to admit that, no matter how much I hate the Patriots, the Cheatriots, the Patsies. Wait a second. Did I say that out loud? I did. Hate it when I think I love. Let's get to some fun stuff, though.
All right.
We've been talking about what ifs for like the last
two
months.
Oh, my gosh.
So the
what
ifs were a lot of fun, weren't they? Did you enjoy them?
I loved them.
I hope everybody out there enjoyed them, too.
I bet you could guess the one I'm still thinking about.
Well, of course, you're still thinking about what if the Herschel Walker trade never happened, and then Herschel Walker was still a running back for the Cowboys. Cowboys never pick Emmitt Smith. The Packers pick Emmitt Smith.
Beautiful.
Brett Favre and Emmitt Smith together. Could you imagine the consequences
of that?
I've
been thinking about that since you brought it up. I've been thinking about that.
That's a great little what if, isn't it?
It's great.
But we're going to change tactics right now. We're going to change direction, and we're going to stick with the NFL.
All right.
But we're going to talk about games with names.
All right.
There's a lot of games with names, and a lot of them, especially being a Raiders fan, happen to be Raider-centric. We're going to save those for later, but we're going to start out with some other notable games with names.
Because when
you hear the name, you know the game, right? You instantly know what game it is, right? Let's give you a game with a name.
Oh, no.
The fumble. You instantly know what game it is, right? 1987 AFC Championship, Cleveland and Denver. Played on January 17th, 1988. It was just about 1 year after the drive, which we will be talking about later. So, in that game, Denver leads Cleveland 21-3 at halftime. You know, and that, they came into that game, Cleveland came into that game thinking this is our chance, revenge against Elway, a chance to go to the Super Bowl. They're in the AFC Championship game.
Did both games happen in Cleveland?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, exactly. And as I said, Denver led the Browns 21-3 at halftime. Denver was on fire. I mean, I watched this game.
Yeah,
of course I did.
Of course you did.
Old. Yeah. But Ernest Biner, the great Ernest Biner, running back for the Browns, led the Browns back in the second half. He got two touchdowns in the third quarter, one passing, one running touchdown. But with 1:12 left in the game, Biner is running towards the end zone for the go-ahead score, and he fumbles on the one-yard line. The fumble. Jeremiah Castillo from the Broncos stripped the ball from Ernest Biner. Denver winds up winning the game 38-33. You know, and following the 88 season, Biner was traded to Washington, the former Washington Redskins.
Yes.
And he wins Super Bowl 26 versus Buffalo in 1992.
Wow.
And redeems himself.
There
the
you
fumble.
Go. The fumble.
Is that a game with a name or is that a game with a name? Here's one.
Yeah, I was going to say, this will be the last one of the day.
Be the last one. This might not be one that you're as familiar with as a lot of these other major ones.
All right.
Do you remember the body bag game?
I don't.
You don't remember the body bag game?
No.
Oh, my goodness. The former Washington Redskins, led by head coach Joe Gibbs, versus the Philadelphia Eagles, led by Buddy Ryan and his amazing defense. And this was on November 12th of 1990 on Monday Night Football, Week 10. Remember, this was just 5 years out from Buddy Ryan's defense winning the Bears the Super Bowl. Okay, Randall Cunningham, a quarterback for the Eagles. Okay, they won 5 of their last 7 games to get a wild card berth. The body bag game. So many players got hurt on the Redskins side. A grand total of 9. Brian Mitchell wound up at quarterback for Washington after Todd Rutledge got hurt. And then later quarterback of the San Diego Chargers, Stan Humphries, got hurt.
Oh, man.
Running back Brian Mitchell came in because he played some quarterback in college, and he wound up at quarterback. So that game, Philly won the game 28-14 and absolutely wrecked Washington.
Yeah.
You know, it was called a body bag game because so many players got hurt.
Does that make sense?
Yep. And before the game, Buddy Ryan was bragging, "You're going to need body bags for all the guys that we're going to take out today." And during the game, one of the Philly players looked over to the Washington sideline and said, "You need some more body bags?" So check this out, though. The upshot is that 8 weeks later in the wild card playoff, after Philly won 5 of their last 7 to get that wild card berth after the body bag game, Philly was at Washington, and Washington won the game, knocking Philly out of the playoffs 20-6, getting their revenge, and it was the last game that Buddy Ryan coached for the Eagles.
The body bag game. I love that title.
You love that?
That's a great one.
I got a ton more for you. We'll get to them next week.
I was going
to
say, save them up for next week because we will dive right back into them.
I got them for you, Bubba.
Well, Rick, thank you so much, man. I always appreciate it.
The sax man cometh and the sax man goeth. I'm done. Down the road, motors, baby. Always a pleasure, my friend.
He is sax man Rick Metz. We'll be back to close out the show here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more. Welcome back as we wrap up this Friday, July 31st. Big thank you to Terry and Rick for talking to me today on the show. Wanted to remind everybody, Reno 1860 FC back in action tomorrow, coming off their thumping of Portland Timbers 2, getting that 4-1 win earlier this week. They are back in action tomorrow night. They'll be at the Las Vegas Lights FC
Kickoff set for 7:30 p.m. Of course, you can join Zach Beirute right here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM for the radio broadcast. ESPN Plus, NSN will also have television coverage, but Zach Beirute has been doing a great job of calling those games right here on ESPN Radio. Of course, he wasn't expecting to be calling 1868 games this year, but great job with the first two. Can't wait to hear the call again tomorrow night. And this is a rivalry game. This is the Silver State Cup. Reno again heading to Las Vegas for the final of four straight road games to open up this season. And, of course, Reno, the two-time defending champions of the Silver State Cup, sweeping Las Vegas last year with a pair of dominant shutouts. And the boys in blue have not lost to Las Vegas as well. Reno 3-0-2 all time against Vegas. So hopefully they can keep that roll going tomorrow night. Again, kickoff set for 7:30 p.m. right here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM with Zach Beirute. So be sure to tune in for that game. And enjoy all the sports this weekend. Basketball, hockey, baseball, soccer, whatever you want. It's on with racing, MMA, all of that going on this weekend. It's going to feel like a weekend like we have not seen in 5-6 months. I mean, it's just going to be beautiful. So be sure to tune in. Enjoy the sports. Be safe out there. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. And just enjoy all the sports happening. And I know I will. I'll talk to you guys on Monday. Have a great, safe weekend. And I'll talk to you at 2 o'clock on Monday. Peace.